It is so easy to focus on what makes our own finances the exception to the rule. Why other people can budget, but we can't. Why other people can put money in savings, but we can't. Why other people can eat food from home, but we can't. But what if we started challenging ourselves to find the positive side of our financial picture, whatever that may be? Because it is there. Today's guest has taken the challenges of variable income and learned how to plan wisely for her family, even as they face an unpaid maternity leave. Here's Alexandra's story. Alexandra, you are here to talk to us about variable income and figuring out how to budget for your family with variable income. So variable income can mean lots of different things to lots of different people. Can you tell us what that means in your family? What are the different pay structures? How variable, how up and down is your income?
Yeah, sure. So both my husband and I work in the hospital system. And so variable for us can include working our regularly scheduled shifts and the expectations of our job titles and meeting all those hours, but then still having hours above or hours below that. So if I need to call out sick for one of our children's illnesses, then I should either expect to use PTO or have my paycheck lessened that pay period. But my husband also does a lot of call and I have the opportunity for overtime as well. So our paychecks are truly variable by how many hours we work based off of the expectation in our job description, but then also those other factors that we have as well.
So when you are planning out your budget, whatever that looks like, how do you decide before you know what it's actually going to be? Do you decide what that amount is? Are you going to estimate, or do you just leave it blank until you get paid?
No, I have a pretty good tab on how many hours of PTO I have in my employee bank at work. And with my husband working full time and knowing that he is very much a workhorse, he does not call off unless he himself needs to be admitted to the hospital. Yeah, it's pretty reliable knowing that, like I said, with the variability of our kids being sick. So what I do is I've looked at pay stubs in the past where I've worked my minimum required shift count for the 2-week pay period because we are paid every other Thursday. And I then have been able to look at what are the lowest numbers I've been paid and my husband's been paid and what are the highest numbers we've been paid. And for the most part, because I am a very risk adverse person, I almost always budget exclusively off of what is the lowest that I can expect both of us to bring home. And then after we figure out how much that is probably going to be, I actually have that across the entire quarter is that same value for him and that same value for myself. And then we fit our expenses in there. And then we'll usually know about 2 days before pay period how much more will be paid. And then that's where we fit in our goals or, you know, add little things here and there, increase the grocery maybe 1 week or two, that kind of thing.
So do you budget on the Debt-Free Mom template or do you use something else?
I do now. Yeah, I moved into that. I was for the longest time just following you and like looking at your Care Creates Contentment. And I was like, that sounds great. And I was way too busy and way too overwhelmed to even like look into it further. And then it was when we were consistently going into the red that I was like, okay, I will spend the extra $9 in a budget that I've not even created yet to go ahead and purchase it. And I'm glad I did.
Awesome. So when you're building that, I love that you're saying that you kind of are risk averse and you go on that lower number because it's definitely a theme of people who have variable income and are consistently trying to make a budget and make a plan. I think the ones who find success inside of variable income are the ones who have learned oftentimes the hard way. I know I certainly learned the hard way that you cannot build a budget on the best case scenario of like, oh, for sure, we'll work all this extra and for sure our paycheck will be higher. It's so much harder to end up having your paycheck be lower than you planned than it is to have it be higher than you planned for. So I think that what you're doing is exactly the thing that can help people who have variable income become more consistent by going more of, if we have to lean one way, let's go a little more pessimistic than optimistic, just in our plans to make it easier on ourselves. I think that's really smart. So as you're building that, and then you, like you said, 2 days before that Thursday payday, you find out what it's actually going to be. What goals are you currently working on where you're like, okay, we have our budget all set, our expenses are covered, and we're going to have a couple hundred extra because of an extra shift or because of overtime. What goals are you focusing on currently?
So our biggest goal at this time is building up our emergency fund. So we are employees at the hospital And our employer does not offer us paid leave without taking our own paid time off, sick hours, vacation hours, however you want to label them. And so we have an upcoming maternity leave. Well, me, I have the upcoming maternity leave. And I have X amount of hours of PTO. And I know that that's not going to last me the entirety of the time that I would like to take to be home with our baby. And so our biggest goal was really trying to build back up our emergency fund, because there was a point in our lives together where we were like working on that. We had built up quite a extensive emergency fund, and just over time, without being really diligent, sticking to even any particular budget, just always trying to spend less, it really isn't a good litmus for, am I being consistent? Am I indulging or overspending in areas that really I could scale back? And it was starting to see our emergency fund like shrink lower and lower, and then realizing that we then would have an upcoming maternity leave where we wouldn't be able to fully fund our monthly expenses. That was kind of what made us reorient our goal towards building up our emergency fund and being really diligent and disciplined about budgeting.
Before I pressed record, I was telling Alexandra that a lot of times people ask about maternity leave because it is such a big financial thing. I mean, no matter what it is, even if you have partial pay and maternity leave or something, there's just like medical expenses, all the new baby gear, and all that is just a really expensive time. So no matter where you're at in debt payoff or saving up for a house or whatever it is, I always support the idea of pausing the other goals and just focusing on putting that extra money in savings. I think you'll always be glad that you did that, even if you don't end up needing it. So I think that that is super smart to be like, okay, we have another big question mark in terms of how much PTO will actually be there by the time you have to take it. And, you know, how long will we need it? And so I think that it is really, really wise to go ahead and say, we are just going to be laser focused on that goal of basically buying your own maternity leave, right? Which, I mean, it's a sad thing, but a lot of parents in the US, that is the truth, that they can either not take that leave or they can save up in order to fund it for themselves. So I fully support from here what you are doing, but it is hard when you have a variable income, because I know somebody, for example, who would be in your same position, except they have a salary, a set salary. They could kind of map out all of their actual expenses, their actual income between now and the start of their maternity leave, and they can know we're going to have this much saved up by this date, and they can predict it pretty well. With variable income, it is way more of a toss-up. So do you have like a specific target amount that you're trying to shoot for? Or are you just kind of going for whatever we happen to have extra is going to go to that goal, since we don't know how much extra it's going to be?
Both. So it did get a little, not sidetracked per se, but I did notice that we had a smaller amount to contribute in the months of November and December, shocking with the holiday season. But that was something that I was trying to be very proactive about, was using the pay that we had coming in rather than pulling from savings to make those desires, those wishes, those priorities happen. So what our goal was, it was both. Actually, you were asking like, is it just whatever we can, or is there like a minimum? So it's both. So my bare minimum has been that at least every pay period, we will put $200 towards my maternity leave. And there have been some pay periods where it was like, okay, it is like $195 and we got to find another $5 to put into it, because that's the, you know, the front end of the month where we've got our rent and we've got our electric bill. I think a significant amount of our bills actually fall in the first half of our month. But then in the second half of the month, usually we could hit that minimum easily and then some. So there have been months cumulatively where we've put only $200 aside towards maternity leave. And then there was a month before we started recently making car payments, like where we put $1,400 into our emergency fund. And so we have both a minimum. I know that I'm planning on taking 12 weeks off of work. I know how much I make every 2 weeks at a minimum. And we know that we need to have at least that amount and then some, because other emergencies happen outside of having to self-pay. So that's kind of new for me too. So not only am I variable, but for the first time, I'll be like self-paid employee.
Okay. So I love that you are taking what you can do, which is setting that minimum and saying like, this is what is necessary in order to make it happen. But then you're also willing to be flexible with how much extra there actually ends up being month to month. I think in reality, you know, it might sound like, oh, well, that's what happens when you have variable income. But I think it's important for people who are listening who have variable income and think, oh, it's going to be too hard to meet my goals or too hard to make a budget because I have variable income. What you're describing is actually not unique to variable income. Everybody's months are different month to month. I mean, even when Kyle was working full time and had a salary income and I was not working at all, so I knew like every other Friday, this is exactly what we're going to get paid. Each month was still different. Now, if our goal at the time was saving up a down payment for a house, there would still be months where we could do like what you said, like over $1,000 into savings. And then there would be another month where it was like, oh, I'm just glad that we aren't withdrawing anything from savings. So I think when we set a standard for ourselves that success in budgeting should look like these super high, consistent numbers that never deviate, and then if we put less in savings this month than we did last month, that means we're doing something wrong. When in reality, whether we have variable pay or a set paycheck month after month, each month can be super, super unique. And like, you know, you just said the holidays and then especially anything that's like an annual bill. I know we have school registration and our annual pool membership, like our summer pool membership, are right back to back. And so it always feels like we, quote unquote, did nothing in those 2 months. But it's really just because we're taking care of some of our larger annual bills. But it sounds like you're finding the way to be okay with some months having a lot of excess and some months having not so much. And that's just really kind of the nature of it, to be honest. Have you maybe in past months or before you really started budgeting, did you ever find yourself getting frustrated by either the variable income or just by the fact that you would end up not putting as much to a goal as you thought you would?
I can't say necessarily that I've been frustrated that I've not put as much towards our goals since making our new priority, building up the emergency fund, because before that we were pretty consistently going into our emergency fund and taking out here to cover that credit card payment just until we got paid because we had enough in our checking account to cover if the electric bill got pulled out, but we needed to make that minimum payment before we got hit with interest. So I can't say that I'm frustrated that I haven't had as much in 1 month from like 1 month to another month, but I can say that there have been times where I'm a very like plan it out kind of person. And that's my nature, risk adverse. I like plans. I like knowing what to expect because that's what gives me a feeling of safety and control. And one of the hardest things has been like the unexpected, oh, I need to purchase something for a colleague at work kind of thing, or we're having a potluck here, or before I started using your budget template, I never would have budgeted for like a sick visit for my kids, which is crazy. My children are little. I should have been budgeting for that kind of thing. So I think the only thing that I could say I've really been frustrated with my variable income is that there were some pay periods where I didn't either use a budget buffer in the beginning, or I would have like a few sick visits with my kids to the pediatrician, and then I still wouldn't expect like to have budgeted in that copay. So then I would have to take that out of my budget buffer. And then it kind of got a little messy there. And I'm like, okay, well, then we've got to cut somewhere else. No toilet paper this month. Like, you know, that kind of.
Yeah. Especially when you're first starting to really track more specifically, like instead of making a general budget categories, actually trying to track those expenses specifically, I feel like it can be frustrating to be like, oh, I set up this plan. I was so happy with how much I thought was going into savings. And for whatever reason, now we're having to back off of it. But it sounds like you're, you know, figuring out ways to be more, not only be more accurate and more realistic, but also be more kind to yourself. If you have something come up, like a kid being sick, that just is life. And there is nothing, you didn't do anything wrong because you had to do that. But it can be easy to feel like that for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So that would be an area where I feel maybe I get a little frustrated because I didn't foresee what could fall into my budget buffer.
So for people listening who have variable income and they don't budget right now, so they're listening to this and they're imagining all of these like hypothetical scenarios that would be like, oh, this is why a budget wouldn't work for me, or this is why it couldn't work. Can you talk through a few things that are maybe examples of what you do when your income ends up being lower than you expected? I know you said you do plan around that bare minimum, which I think is super helpful. But are there occasionally times where you do have to make adjustments because of that, whether there's a certain expense or if your income is lower? Do you already know in your head, like, these are my backup plans for what I'm going to do or where I'm going to pull money from if I end up having a deficit between that income and expenses?
Yeah. So some of my safety fallbacks are, we do put a modest amount aside for both my husband and I to have like personal fund money and stuff like that. So that is the category where we could both pull back, because I'm a saver by nature. And my husband, I don't know that he's necessarily a saver, but he's definitely not a spender. He's more of a, let me know what's happening and I'll go along with it. He's very easygoing. So that's phenomenal. And he trusts me to then like look at the big picture and divvy things up how it should be. So he trusts if I ever need to pull back on how much personal fund money we have. I also include a budget buffer as well. And in the beginning, I didn't do that because I was like, I'm going to get it right. It's going to be fine. And it wasn't. I consistently, like the first 3 or 4 pay periods, I consistently made a mistake and then realized that I had extra expenses with outings out with the kids or doctor's visits, or, you know, you never remember that, at least in the state of Florida, every year for your birthday, you get to buy yourself your vehicle registration. It's the government's way of saying happy birthday. So, you know, those are things where like, you can definitely pre-plan that when you're actually remembering that. But I feel like because we live in an age where there's so much information overload and we have so many responsibilities in different facets of life, that it's hard to keep track of all those things. So I like that you had the worksheet there as well. But we can often like pull from our personal spend money. I do set aside money for at least 1 or 2 evenings out, or like bring food into that room. So if we needed to, we could always like do a pantry meal or scrounge up more leftovers or get creative with what we have in the freezer. So we can always take back from our restaurants there. And then our grocery budget, I would say I like to purchase our like household supplies with our groceries. And so my grocery budget mentally for me encompasses things like dish soap and paper towels, toilet paper, body soap for the kids, that kind of stuff. So I kind of loop that all in. So if I needed to, I could always lower our grocery budget because we buy most of our items from either Sam's or Walmart. And I could always lower our category there and just not be like as liberal with how much I spend that pay period. So we've got a few different categories where I could always pull back if we needed to.
I think that is a really helpful, like getting in front of the issue and kind of answering the question before it comes up is so helpful. So that when it actually does happen, where there is a deficit of some kind, instead of scrambling and being like, what am I going to do? Where am I going to pull this money from? If we just have those in the back of our minds, like, oh, it would, even if we had a deficit of $60, it would still be okay because I already have decided that these are going to be the more flexible categories that we can take care of that. So yeah, I do a really similar thing. My first line of defense is to try and adjust just the current pay period, just reduce expenses enough to make up for that gap. And then my second line of defense is to pull money from sinking funds that don't really have a specific purpose. So if I'm just kind of generally putting money into a certain fund, like home improvement or something like that, but there's no specific project in mind, then I'll just pull money from there because it's not negatively affecting my overall goals. And then my last line of defense is pulling money from the bigger savings like the emergency fund. What I love about the pay period budget too is that if I do end up having to do that, I can immediately look into my future pay periods for when I'm going to refill that money so that I make sure I kind of bounce myself back up before it would happen again, which is really important for people with variable income to not let 1 or 2 negative pay periods snowball into a bunch of negative pay periods.
Which honestly, I can relate to a lot because I very minimally budgeted by month, knowing like what monthly expenses we would have. And then I think one of the greatest strengths of the by pay period feature of your template is the fact that you have your dates at the top, which seems really small. I mean, the formulas are great. But what's really fantastic for me as a visual person is the dates at the top, because I know that my electric bill comes out every single 4th day of the month. And that was before, like, I knew it would come out of a monthly pay somehow, but we were still at that time being paid every other Thursday. So it would then change which day the fourth day of the month actually hit. And was that at the end of a pay period where we were waiting and going into our emergency fund or our savings to try to pull that money out to make sure that we didn't have, you know, a withdrawal below limits kind of thing? That was always a dicey game. And I can't say that I was always like a plan ahead kind of budgeter. I needed to for my mental health because I had a year where it was just like, where's the money going to come from? Okay, I know I need to make this much because we have to pay these amount of bills. And it was about like 10 or 12 months of not knowing how much was coming in because we had extremely variable hours, which then meant extremely variable pay. But also we were still dipping into our emergency fund at that time. And so I didn't feel like I had my footing on any kind of grounding.
Yeah, it can get overwhelming fast. And even, you know, you can do well for several months in a row and then have one month where, you know, that income just isn't there, but there's extra expenses going on and it can get out of hand quickly. I think that's, you know, you were mentioning the dates at the top of the pay period template. One thing I noticed right away is that the people that I tend to hear from who have the largest transformation, just like mentally in the way that they're thinking about their money from before they use the debt-free mom template to now, tends to be people who are paid bi-weekly, every other Friday, every other Thursday, because it almost fits into a monthly budget, but it just doesn't. And so there's always this little bit of tension. And you know, what you described is the perfect example of the fourth of the month when you have a bill and you're like, okay, great, the fourth of the month and my budget, I'm making a February budget. So this is the money that we're bringing in February, and then the budget's going to start on February 1st. So we'll pay the electric bill on February 4th. But in reality, for people who are paid biweekly, that first paycheck of the month could easily come on like February 11th or something. And so when you're like, oh, well, I didn't budget for February's electric bill in January, now where am I supposed to pull that money from? So that mental game of like letting the credit card build up and then paying it off later, or pulling money from savings and trying to put it back later, is a constant struggle that is so frustrating and unnecessarily so. That's why I am super passionate about pay period budgeting, because if you can switch to this idea of asking yourself, not only what do I need to pay for, but when will that income be available, it can drastically decrease how much you feel out of control with your finances.
Right. I think especially too, because most of our recurring expenses do occur in those first 5 to 6 days or so of the calendar month. Knowing then if there's a pay period near the end of the previous month where I need to save up some of our income from then to cover our rent, our electric bill, I believe our phone bill comes out every 3 months. So that one gets tricky too, because then, you know, you're only able to see it so many months at a time if you're doing a monthly budget. But when you're doing budgeting by the quarter, a bill that comes out every 3 months is actually very easy to plan and prepare for, when normally you wouldn't be including that expense in your other pay periods. So what used to be like a super dicey game of prep is now a lot more reliable and just expected.
When it seems like there should be more left in your bank account and your money seems too complicated to keep track of, the Debt-Free Mom Custom Budget Service takes the guesswork out of your next budget. Send us your real numbers and you'll receive two versions of your pay period budget. The original, so you can see how your money is currently flowing, and a suggested budget with changes we recommend to prioritize your money goals. Sign up for your custom budget today at debtfreemom.co/custom. And I think in a situation where income is variable for really any reason, whether it's commission or hourly, or, you know, somebody who has a base pay and then they get overtime or bonuses, it's really important when you have such a large component of your finances that isn't set, it's not constant. If that's the case, we kind of have to offset that by being even more consistent in the other areas that we can know ahead of time. So I think it's so helpful to not just have a budget ready, but waiting to find out what that paycheck is going to be, but also to plan more than just one pay period or 1 month at a time. Like if we can actually zoom out and see that big picture by looking at, like on our template, looking at 6 pay periods at a time, we can kind of see how we only have to focus on one pay period at a time when it comes to staying on budget, But at the same time, in that exact same document, we can also see how each pay period leads into the next and can connect to our overall larger plan. I always felt like, I mean, if it was just like you said, needing a sense of control, I always felt better when I could at least look at that and see like, okay, is the mess in my head or are the fears in my head actually matching what the budget is telling me is going on in our finances? A lot of times it really was in my head. I was making it more complicated and more negative than it was actually going to be. So having a place to actually look at that and to lay those numbers out and to say, I don't know yet what my paycheck is going to be, but I can make as best of a plan as possible ahead of time with the things that I do know so that I'm accurate, I'm realistic, and I'm flexible, leaving room for things like a budget buffer or personal spending cash. And then once I do find out what my paycheck is going to be, I have a place to just drop it in and I don't need to start from scratch every single time.
Very much so. Yeah. When you tame the chaos of the unknown, you're able to make decisions moving forward with the facts that you have. So like, it's not this big nebulous of, I don't even know if I can handle that. I don't think that I could handle like needing to get my two back tires replaced. You can look, you can see, and you'd see where you'd have to pull it out or make accommodations. But when it's all scrambling in your head, it's completely different than when you've got it, you know, either written down. For some people, they like to write it physically, but I feel like the flexibility of being able to modify the numbers day by day, hour by hour in the actual Google Sheet is extremely helpful because it helps tame that unknown beast in our brains.
Yeah. And it leads itself more to like problem solving. And like when you come up with something, like you said, like getting back tires replaced unexpectedly, or, you know, what if you have to call in because one of your kids are sick and you've already burned through all your PTO? So this is just going to be a lower paycheck. I think instead of being frozen by that curveball, we can actually say, okay, this is not great. And I wouldn't choose this if I could choose, but I'm going to accept that this is the reality. And I'm going to jump into my budget and make some of those adjustments so that I can see how we are going to modify our original plan around what we now know to be true. So even if it is a temporary crisis, the amount of time we spend stressing out and worrying and all that kind of stuff becomes so much shorter. I mean, it's hard to explain to someone who hasn't yet tried a system like that, but I'm like, even in times when our finances do feel up in the air, I don't stay up at night like sweating it, where I'm like trying to run all the numbers in my head. Simply because I do have a place to actually look at the real numbers and go from being frozen and paralyzed by fear into, okay, I am overwhelmed by this and I am unsure of whether or not it's going to work out the way that I want it to. But with a tool like this, I can focus on problem solving.
I think you said it great. Like, you move from being frozen and paralyzed with your fear to being able to make a decision. And I feel like you could really market this to the puzzle community, because I know you're into puzzling. I'm really into puzzling too. And I feel like this is like the perfect puzzle to try to make the numbers look fantastic. And it's a challenge. And I almost feel like driven by it. Like, okay, how can I see my goal? How can I amplify my goal? I see that this is a stumbling block here. What can I do to get around that? And you know what your goal is. It's not this undefined thing. Like, your goal is to not be in the red, or maybe two goals. Maybe your goal is to not be in the red, and then your goal is whatever else it is, either saving up for your emergency fund, paying off debt, tackling that, or, you know, whatever have you. You know what it is. It's clearly defined. It's labeled. It's there. And it's like a money puzzle.
Yeah, it's like I've said it in the past. This was years ago at this point, but when I was first getting started and I was super small and I didn't actually have like a business, I just had an Instagram account, trying to describe to people like in person what I did, I always said that I think people who love Sudoku would really like it, is what I said, because it's just like you're trying to make the numbers happy. You're trying to make them fit into the right boxes in a way that gets you out of the red and into the green. And I do think it does help overcome that hopelessness of my money is a mess and just like there's just no way to get out of it. And it turns into, like you said, a puzzle where it's like, all right, here are the numbers. There's different dials that I can turn, whether it's making certain expenses go down, pausing certain expenses until I hit a goal, or temporarily increasing income. What are those dials that I need to turn, and how long will it take until it does what I want it to do? Because, you know, yeah, we can't solve a problem that we can't see, that we're not aware of. So putting those numbers, even if they first show up negative, that's why it's like, especially again, because we're focusing on variable income here, when I end up having a paycheck that's lower than I thought it would be, I've kind of trained myself to say, like, it does not feel better to ignore it. It does not, it's not going to be better to be like, well, I might as well not even put this in the budget because I know it's going to make it negative. I've tried to train myself to say, like, as soon as you find out what your paycheck is going to be, even if it's going to be a negative number at the top, do it right away so that you can start to figure out what you're going to adjust, what you're going to do instead. Because the reality is that that negative number is going to show up in my bank account whether I decide to write it into a budget or not. So that personally has really helped me get out of the idea that ignorance is bliss and instead be like, no, actually looking at the full reality of the numbers is how you get through to bliss, not ignoring it, which is what I tended to do before. And something that we talked about in last week's episode with someone else who had variable income is that sometimes when it can get frustrating to figure out planning and the budget all around a variable income, it can be helpful to remind ourselves that there's actually benefits of variable income too, where we can say, you know, I have this short-term goal and we really need a short push of some extra income into the family. But once we achieve that, we can go back to, you know, our less frequent overtime shifts or whatever. For someone that's 100% salary with a set paycheck no matter what, they really can't do that. They would have to go find an extra job, for example, in order to bump up that income. So it is helpful to remember that while there are challenges of variable income, and for people who are listening who maybe only focus on the downsides of the variable income when they're trying to figure out a budget, there really are certain perks. And it's so much easier to do one extra shift at a job that you are already really familiar and comfortable with, and you know how much you'll get paid when you do that shift, than it is to go out and try to get hired for like a second extra part-time job that you've never done before, for example. So for all of its challenges, we do see perks and benefits in having variable income if we can just put a little bit of planning around it ahead of time so that we know what it's going to do when I get paid extra, but then also what I'm going to do if we have unexpected expenses or if I get paid less than I thought. So thank you so much, Alexandra, for taking just a little bit of time to share your story, share your experience with how your family really has made it work on variable income.
This is Kyle here with Carly, and we're going to try out a new segment for this episode. It might be the only time that we do it. We'll see how it goes. You let us know if you like this or not, but we're doing a new segment that we're calling Financial Fortune Cookie.
You should definitely have spin music there.
Okay. Insert music here. Just like when you open a fortune cookie and it like tells you a vague scenario about your future that will definitely come true all the time, we're going to talk about something in the future. And so picture this. You are a year from now submitting your taxes and you have used ChatGPT to file your tax return. What are your emotions? What are your thoughts?
Mine?
Yeah, you.
Like me personally, I'm using that for my own personal tax, yeah. Our taxes.
Are you looking back and saying, what have I done? Or are you like, this was the best thing that's ever happened?
Do you mean that ChatGPT would fill out the tax forms for me?
So according to an article from CNBC that was just a couple days ago. So this, we're recording this right before the
tax day
mm-hmm. deadline. And so just as of a couple days ago, 14% of Americans that were surveyed for this article have said that they used ChatGPT to review their tax return. And nearly half
letting me know that I don't know what ChatGPT does.
Nearly half, I think it was somewhere in the 40% of people surveyed said that they were open to it, but had not actually done it.
So by review it, you mean that the person either filled it out themselves or used a tax service of some kind to fill it out
and then is using ChatGPT to ask, like, what's the likelihood that I'm going to get audited, or like, how accurate is this tax form?
You could use it for a few different scenarios, like, hey, find me some more deductions.
Okay, so here's my thing. If we lived in a country that had like flat tax or had transparent tax codes, and you knew what the codes were supposed to be, and it was very like linear and straightforward, I would be all about that, because it would be like very basic calculations of like, did I miss anything? Is everything here? The US has such convoluted tax code that not only is so messy and unclear, but changes literally every year, that I would say it would be generous to say I had 5% faith in ChatGPT to accurately like tell me something about the taxes.
Okay, can I ask you another clarifying question? Have you used ChatGPT for anything?
Yes.
Okay, so
I do have a ChatGPT account, and I've used it for basic like writing a caption or a headline on, you know, give a title for this post or whatever.
You haven't put the prompt in, do my taxes.
No. No.
I'm going to open ChatGPT right now, and I'm going to type that in. I'm going to see what happens.
I mean, you know, you're an early adopter and I'm a late adopter.
It is.
Oh my gosh.
Right now it is giving me
a to-do list,
5, 7, 9, 10-step plan on how to do my taxes. The last one is seek professional help.
Also, this is not anything that you could not, like, there's a billion blog posts that say this exact set. Like, I mean, it's gather your documents, choose your filing method, use a software, follow the instructions. Mm-hmm. So this is not uniquely beneficial, where it's like, oh, before ChatGPT, I couldn't have been told to follow the instructions.
Yes, and now I know I need to file by the deadline.
I want to know what the prompt was that the people who actually used it, like, what specifically were they asking it? Like I said, I'm thinking it's like, here's my tax form. How likely am I to be audited?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say that with the number of people who listen to this show, I'm gonna bet that we have at least one person.
All right. If you are a transparent soul and you used ChatGPT to assist you on your taxes, I think the reason I have such a hang up with like imagining what this would even look like is that to me, it is like the, like we've done before, it's like write the Declaration of Independence in this kind of voice, and then it like does that. So it's like completely nonsensical kind of stuff. So I'm thinking like that on their taxes, it was like, come up with a way for me to have 5 kids instead of 4. You know, it's like that's the kind of like jokey questions that I have imagined ChatGPT to be used for. But I do know that people use it very sincerely for very helpful things. When this was something I had never thought of, when I did Feed the Family Month last month, someone told me that she uses ChatGPT to meal plan by putting in all of their allergies and preferences, like give me a meal plan with links to recipes for 7 dinners that don't include dairy, like that kind of thing. And it like does it immediately. So that is a cool way to use it. I haven't personally done that because I'm not unhappy with my meal planning, but I think for somebody who is like stuck or in a rut. But that, I guess that's why I'm confused about the tax thing, because it's like this creativity tool of like imagining possibilities that you wouldn't come up with faster than you could. So
find more deductions that I'm not aware of. that would probably be the way that it would be used.
Yeah, but like that's what a tax software does. I mean, like it feels similar to that when you do like, you know, TurboTax. It's like asking you very conversational questions, like, did you sell a house this year?
In the article, though, is that most of the tax softwares out there had this season started to implement some generative AI chatbots and other tools. So as you're going through their softwares and filing it, if you have a question, you're not usually directly talking to a person.
Right.
You are first going through their chatbot to help you with their specific software, troubleshoot their like specific issues for their users. And that's kind of a pilot in the hopes that in the near future, in the next few years, as this technology continues to develop, that you could just go onto your software of choice and say, do my taxes. And then it says, here you go.
And then give OpenAI every single number about your financial life.
Yep.
Easy peasy.
It's great. So as you look in the future,
yes,
a year from now,
that will not be me.
That will not be
me. That will be many people. That will not be me.
This is the unlucky number on the other side of the fortune cookie.
Yeah, my fortune would say something along the lines of, you know how you every once in a while you get a fortune cookie and it's like, aren't fortunes supposed to be a good thing? And like the one that you open is like an omen.
Yeah,
it's like, you know,
this is a little bit.
Yeah. Like I'm going to get the one that's like, 1 year from now, you'll be spending 13 hours and $7,000 on your taxes.
Great.
That's me. Yeah. Thanks for the heads up.
Thanks, ChatGPT.
For nothing.
All right. Well, this is a new segment. If you liked it, let us know. If you hated it, let us know. We won't do it again. Or maybe we will just out of spite. But that's how we roll here at Debt Free Mom. That's the theme song now. Carly, okay. If you are just listening and you're not watching this, Carly had a facial expression of joy and total acceptance, and we'll be exclusively using that song from now on. So look forward to hearing
Thank
it
you.
Again next week.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Debt-Free Mom podcast. If you want to join me as a guest on the show, go to dfmpodcast.com. The Debt-Free Mom podcast is hosted by me, Carly Hill, and is produced, edited, and mixed by Kyle Hill. Music for this episode was written by Kyle Hill. Hit subscribe wherever you're listening to join in with every new episode as we grow our confidence and contentment in our personal finances.